Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Justice Department officials hear from tribal leaders across the country during a listening session in Rapid City, South Dakota. Wednesday's meeting was held in conjunction with the one-year anniversary of the Tribal Law and Order Act. Charles Michael Ray reports.
The Tribal Law and Order Act intended to address shortfalls within the justice system and law enforcement in Indian country. But a year after its implementation, tribal leaders from South Dakota are still concerned over a lack of resources and funding, cloudy jurisdictional issues, difficulties with the court system, and problems with domestic violence. John Yellowbird Steele is the president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and says crime is tied to poverty on Pine Ridge.
We need to create jobs to prevent crime. We need to give them some hope. All of my grandchildren need some hope that they're going to have a life in these United States.
Yellowbird Steele praises South Dakota's U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson for his efforts to reach out to tribes. Meanwhile, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder outlined the successes of the Tribal Law and Order Act, including efforts to strengthen tribal courts, increased consultation with tribes, and increasing federal support for local law enforcement. But Holder says more work needs to be done to address all of the issues at stake.
And as every person in this room knows, significant challenges and serious obstacles still remain before us.
Holder says efforts to reduce domestic violence in Indian country must be stepped up. He says Native justice systems need clear jurisdiction to hold non-Native abusers accountable. He also stresses that the U.S. Department of Justice must maintain a strong partnership and a good relationship with Native communities. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The native village of Eyak in Cordova, Alaska, is conducting a genetic study of moose in the Copper River Delta. The study will look at the overall health and diversity of the population. KCHU's Tony Gorman reports.
24 calves were brought to the Copper River Delta between 1949 and 1958. Since then, certain factors have caused the moose population to fluctuate.
Well, it all depends on how much food is available that year or how harsh of winters we're having.
Today, Campbell is with the native village of Eyak. She says at one point, the population was up to 1,200 in the Copper River Delta. Over the last few years, that number has dropped in the 300 to 400 range. Campbell says now NVE wants to take a closer look at the population.
As with any population that is secluded like that, it brings a possibility for issues later down the line, because all of the moose that we have here in the Delta now all came from those original 24 calves. So we're just trying to get out there and get a genetic database started of our moose population so to be able to monitor the health properly.
NVE has already started the study by collecting moose meat. Once the samples are collected, they will be sent to the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Things you might want to look at when you're interested in the overall state of the population is its genetic diversity.
Chris Hundermark is an associate professor of wildlife ecology at UAF and has worked mostly with moose species. His lab will extract DNA from the samples.
We create DNA fingerprints or read the DNA fingerprints from the DNA so that we can identify individual moose, for instance, but overall get a general sense of the level of genetic diversity in the population. So for any particular genetic marker, how many different forms it has.
Hundermark says finding the genotype of a species could take as little as a week. As for the overall study, NVE expects to have results within the next few months. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
During this week in 1959, the Indian Claims Commission recognized 11 bands of Indians in Northern California. The bands became the federally recognized Pitt River Tribe. Many of the people were fishers and gatherers whose lives were changed by the California Gold Rush and the occupation of the valley by white settlers. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American radio service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Joel Green. He's the producer of the film, the TV show Curiosity Quest. He's here shooting things in Alaska. Joel, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So I'm not a TV watcher, but I have heard of Curiosity Quest before. Could you educate our audience as to why and whereabouts and how it came about?
Sure. Curiosity Quest, we've been recording for over 10 years. We started in Southern California, and the whole premise behind the show are what students, kids are curious about. We started off on one little local cable access station in Ontario, California. We took a letter that somebody was curious about how they make donuts. We went to a Krispy Kreme donut place and learned the process of making donuts, and that was the beginning. And here we are. I think we've done about 160 episodes in that time period, and now we're up in Alaska exploring.
What's your background in video before the first show?
I have a communications degree from Cal State Fullerton, and in terms of background of being on TV or hosting or producing, I had no background whatsoever.
On the job training,
and I wouldn't have done it any other way. I mean, my real training comes with communicating with the age level that we really try to shoot for, and that is fourth and fifth graders. For about 5 years prior to doing the TV show, I've been going to elementary schools and I've been doing historical reenactments. So I still do those. So for 15 years now, I've been going to schools and I visit about 130 schools in Southern California, see over 10,000 students every single year and perform nonstop for them. So I get that. It's easy for me as a 36-year-old guy to communicate with fourth and fifth graders for some reason. So.
What kind of characters did you dress up as?
Fourth grade, I do the California Gold Rush. So I do James Marshall, founder of gold in California. And then for fifth grade, I do a Paul Revere presentation.
Cool.
Yeah.
Some sample quests you've been on since you produced the show?
Yeah. I mean, recently really kind of cool prior to coming up here, we just found out we received two Telly Awards, one for a show we did on what it's like to be a firefighter. We did a whole firefighter training simulation where they got to go and see what it's like to be a firefighter, dress up in all the gear, get blindfolded, put through a maze, pull a dummy out of a building that was smoked out after going up four flights of stairs, got to put out a real fire. We found out we also won an award for a karate episode. Students wanted, for years I've gotten this letter on what it's like to participate in karate, and martial arts, and I was always kind of standoffish about doing that just because I didn't want to promote fighting and on the show at the age that we're talking to, and boy, did my eyes get open when we did the karate episode because that's not what it's about at all. So I really, really enjoyed those two episodes, and like I said, we just won tellies for those.
So you started out as a cable access program in Inland Empire in Los Angeles area, and now you're a national program. It must be a pretty fun job.
It's a blast. I can't imagine doing anything else, and I every time we go out on an adventure, I mean, before we start the show, I always am like pinching myself. Wow, am I really going to get to do what we're going to get to do? And wherever it is, I mean, we do a Curiosity Quest Goes Green series where every topic's on the environment, or has a green twist to it, and then we do our regular shows where we're you know, learning what it's like to be someone or going to tours and doing factory tours, whether it be cheese or Jelly Belly candies or Fender guitars. I mean, so it really just depends. It's really great.
And it's pretty much unscripted?
It's all unscripted. The only thing we have planned is my intro and my outro on every show. And I pretty much say the same thing at the beginning and the end of every show. And then in the middle, it's, you know, it's really kind of whatever happens, and it's a lot of fun.
What are you doing here in Alaska?
What brought us up here to Alaska, we have a letter from Megan, who's from Butte, Montana, and she wanted to know how to train sled dogs. And so in doing our research, that was our main thing that got us up here. And we're thinking, okay, if we end up going up to Alaska and doing a show on sled dogs and people training for the Iditarod and whatnot, what else is in the area? And so we started going through our letters, and we found that, wow, there's a couple people want to know about salmon and how do they know where to go when they lay their eggs and why do they go where they go to lay their eggs. And so we got connected with Macaulay Fish Hatchery, and a wonderful person from the Fish and Wildlife, and we did a show on that as well. So we did two episodes while we were up here.
And doing anything more that you're discovering along the way?
Up here in Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. The weather, as you know, it's been raining quite a bit, which kind of hampered a little bit of our plans. We were supposed to go up in the up on the glacier and actually do the sled dog training on the glacier. Temescal was supposed to take us up there and do that, but because of the fog, and I don't think it was the rain, but I think it was the fog, prevented us from flying up there. So we went up to the Gold Rush Sled Dog Training Camp instead, which was wonderful. I mean, it was wonderful. So we got shifted around a little bit, and instead of flying up there, we went on a whale watching tour, and it's been such a wonderful trip up here.
What's your staff like?
We have Melissa. Part of why we made our way to Juneau, Melissa's actually working with the Canopy Zipline Tours this summer. She just got married. She's a producer. Let me back up. Melissa's my sister-in-law, and she's been the producer on the show since day one. And she moved up here to Alaska for the summer. Her and her husband decided to take kind of a hiatus and really enjoy their summer before they put their roots down in Southern California. So she came up, started working for Canopy Zipline Tours, and part of the reason, the main reason why we're in Juneau was because she was here. And then we have two camera guys that go with us everywhere we go. And then my wife, Tammy, who is also a producer on the show, and she handles most of the we have kids questions on every one of our show where we go out and ask kids questions. And so she focuses a lot on that while we're going through the process, tries to pull out really great questions that come up during the topic of the show.
What kind of gear do you use?
We use P2s. So our equipment are all small cameras, Panasonic 2s, hard drives, no more tape. We haven't used tape in a very long time. But, yeah, really small, light audio packs, lavs on myself and the person I'm interviewing. And so we're real mobile.
Other than the programs you won awards for, what have been some of the best quests you've been on?
Some of my favorite shows we've ever done, by far my favorite show, is we did a show with the Harlem Globetrotters. They came to town in the Southern California area where I live, Inland Empire, and I was asked completely out of the blue if I would like to come and join them and be a part of the show. And I actually thought it was a joke when they were calling me to ask me this. I thought it was a friend of mine pulling a prank on me because they know I love basketball, and it wasn't. They were asking me to join the show and participate against the Globetrotters, and I said, well, I'll do it as long as I can record it. And I'd had plenty of quest letters for years on what it's like to be a basketball player, or can you go and learn basketball from a real player, and you know, quests like along those lines. So we decided to take that and record it. And in doing so, we actually went to a couple elementary schools and took part in setting a Guinness World Book of Records with jump roping the most time. So that quest stands out in my mind. Other ones are racing race cars in the California Speedway, flying in a police helicopter, going to the Ben & Jerry's ice cream factory in Vermont was a dream come true, because when you start doing a show like this, like, I'd love to go here, I want to go here, but we really have to wait for those letters to come in before we go anywhere. And sure enough, we got a letter that sent us out to Vermont and wanted to know how Ben & Jerry's made their ice cream. So
that's how you get your ideas, from letters that come in?
Every single one of our shows is sent to us from, like I said, either a kid or a student. And actually, we get letters from adults as well. Telling me what they're curious about. If they log onto our website, curiosityquest.org, on every single page, it basically says, send Joel on a quest. And so at the end of every show, I always say, if you want to tell me what you're curious about, go to curiosityquest.org, tell me what you're curious about. So we get about 2,000 quest letters a month right now. So our ideas, we're not short of any ideas at this point. And a lot of them are similar, but that's where all our ideas come from.
What's the most similar idea you've come up with or you've received so far?
The most common, this may surprise people, but the most common letter we get is a show we've not done yet. And the reason why I say it most surprise people, because I'm kind of resistant to doing this show. And the show is, how do they make video games? I'm not a big gamer myself. I've got kids, and my kids really don't play video games. And I've seen how they make video games, which is a lot of code sitting in front of a computer and code at the keyboard. And I just can't – I guess I'm having a hard time getting over the fact that I don't know how I can make a half-hour show out of how to make video games. So that's the most common letter we get. Aside from that, it's usually how do you make things, like instruments. That's a really popular – letters that we get to or how they make different musical instruments.
Cool. I've been talking with Joel Green, producer of the Curiosity Quest. If you need more information about that, you can check on his website, curiosityquest.com.
.org.
.org, excuse me. Joel, thank you very much for coming down the station today and talking about your show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 28th of July, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet John Ashbery, Rochester, New York, 1927, raised on a farm near Lake Ontario, worked as an art critic in Paris and New York in the 50s and 60s, his poetry influenced by abstract expressionist art. John Ashbery, who once said, "I don't find any direct statements in life. My poetry imitates or reproduces the way knowledge or awareness come to me, which is by fits and starts and by indirection. I don't think poetry arranged in neat patterns would reflect that situation. My poetry is disjunct, but then so is life." It's the birthday of the poet and priest Gerard Manley Hopkins, 1844, in Essex, England. Went to Oxford, studied classics, wrote poetry there, and while he was at Oxford, Hopkins, who was an Anglican, converted to Roman Catholicism, decided to become a Jesuit priest, burned all of his poetry, though he did keep a journal, and in 1875 he returned to poetry. He was ordained 1877, worked as a parish priest in the slums of Manchester, Liverpool, and Glasgow, lived in Dublin until he died of typhoid fever in 1889. Overworked, exhausted, unwell. Most of his poetry was not published in his lifetime, and those who did read it had a hard time understanding it. It's the birthday of the philosopher Karl Popper, born Vienna, 1902, who rejected the idea of inductive reasoning, the idea that one can prove a scientific theory by trials and experiments. Popper said that it was impossible to prove irrefutably that something was true. The best you could do was to try every method to prove that it was not true. And if you couldn't prove it false, then you could consider it corroborated, but not proven true. It's the birthday of Earl Tupper, 1907, Berlin, New Hampshire. He'd worked for DuPont. He started working with polyethylene plastics, and he developed clear storage containers with watertight, flexible lids, which he called Tupperware. It's the birthday of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, born Jacqueline Bouvier, Southampton, New York, 1929. Wrote poems as a child, wrote some work that appeared in local newspapers, wrote a cartoon series in high school, won a contest at Vogue magazine for writing an essay on the subject, "People I Wish I Had Known." She named Oscar Wilde, Charles Baudelaire, and Serge Diaghilev. And she was working as the inquiring camera girl for the Washington Times Herald, interviewing famous people when she interviewed John F. Kennedy, and then she married him. Here's a poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins on his birthday. "My own heart, let me have more, have pity on, let me live to my sad self, hereafter kind, charitable. Not live this tormented mind, with this tormented mind tormenting yet. I cast for comfort, I can no more get by groping round my comfortless, than blind eyes in their dark can day or thirst confine, thirsts all in all, in all a world of wet. Soul, self, come, poor Jack self, I do advise you, jaded, let be. Call off thoughts a while elsewhere. Leave comfort, root room, let joy, sighs at God knows when to God knows what, whose smiles not wrung, see you. Unforeseen times, rather, as skies between pie mountains lights a lovely mile. My own heart, let me have more, have pity on," a poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:20, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Dale Kelly from the Executive. She is the Executive Director of the Alaska Tourist Association. Dale Kelly, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you, Jeff.
So for people who do not know, tell me a little bit about the background of the Alaska Trollers Association.
Well, the Alaska Trollers Association is a professional trade organization representing hook and line salmon fishermen. It's been around since 1925, more than likely started up for price negotiations. In the 30s, there was quite a bit of consternation over price between processors and fishermen, and we can find a lot of specific documentation then that was kind of a key role for the organization. And it kind of came and went, began in Ketchikan, moved to Sitka, was moved back to Ketchikan and reformulated under the nonprofit laws of the 1970s. And from there, it ultimately came to Juneau, and it's been here since the early 80s. It's been... The mission has come a long way from any kind of price negotiation. In fact, we have nothing to do with price from my perspective where we sit. We work on the issues that affect the fleet, and our mission statement is actually to preserve, promote, and perpetuate the fishing industry in Alaska, and to that end, we work for conservation, sound management, good public policy, and safety at sea for the general welfare and mutual benefit of all.
You talked about price. What actually does determine the price of fish?
I think the markets are rather fickle, and that's not really my area of expertise, but obviously supply and demand is key. I think right now health issues are really affecting people's choices in the foods that they're eating, so probably any number of things.
Are you a troller yourself?
Off and on. I deckhand on a boat out of Craig right now.
Would you say there's anything that typifies a commonality between trollers?
A commonality. Freedom-loving, they're independent, have a curiosity about the world around them. You have to be a troller and figure out how to entice those fish to bite. So they're, like all fishermen, a pretty interesting crowd.
And how many members do you have?
Well, at any one time, we represent about a third of the fleet, and there's about 2,600 troll permit holders. About half of them to a little less are active every year. Right now, there's about 850 boats landing fish. So.
What are some of the current issues you're involved with now?
Well, the Pacific Salmon Treaty is kind of a never-ending process for us, and that also kind of dovetails with issues under the Endangered Species Act, not because of any stocks of concern here in our state, but because of the Columbia River Basin and Puget Sound. We're also in our kind of other priorities include Board of Fisheries and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, who is right now reviewing our salmon fishery management plan. We are a unique fishery. We fish federal and state waters. We've got a fleet that ranges from nearshore waters to out to 40, 50 miles offshore. So because of that, we're managed under a federal system. Just basically any law that affects fishing, nearly all of them affect trawlers, and that's kind of unique amongst salmon fishermen. We have offshore fish farming, and genetically engineered salmon is of grave importance to our members. We follow U.S. Coast Guard safety regs, EPA and DEC regulations, and we have a big concern to protect habitat for salmon.
Wouldn't you say most trawlers who have been doing it for now have been doing it for a number of years?
Would I say that?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and I guess until quite recently we were concerned because there's been quite an aging of the fleet, overall in the fishing industry. But quite recently we're seeing the next generation show up, which is actually one of the most rewarding parts of my career is to see the next gen. And there's quite a number of them. So,
is it hard to break into the field?
I think the one advantage of trolling has been that it's a little less expensive than some fisheries to buy into, but certainly you have to have a level of expertise that is developed over time. You know, a lot of the young guys are taking over their family or operations, which has been helpful. But I think, you know, fishermen are generally, they're secretive but yet helpful. So I think that new folks coming in find pretty welcoming atmosphere.
Is it true there's, it seems like there's two types of trolling, hand trolling and power trolling?
Yes, absolutely. And then there's also boats that slush their fish. There's ice boats and there's freezer boats. It's a very diverse fleet.
Is there anything that is it like a typical day for a troller?
Long hours. You're up at the scrape of dawn. They pull anchor. A lot of them are pulling anchor at 2:30, 3 in the morning. They fish until dark. And it's just a grind. It's all day long kind of affair, and they love it.
Why do they love it?
Well, nobody's telling you what to do except the fish and the environment. So it's there's a lot of freedom in commercial fishing. I think people just love being out there, and they love delivering the product. We have a very high-grade product. You feel quite proud when you ice those fish at night or throughout the day. But it's a nice product to very much pride in workmanship.
What are some of the future issues that you're on the horizon?
Well, I think that as long as there's people in development, we're going to, you know, salmon are going to be stressed. The salmon that we harvest, you know, come from the Columbia River Basin and Alaska. So, you know, we're going to chronically be on the watch for what's happening, you know, whether it's Taku River development or what's going on in Puget Sound. You know, people are quite anxious about that. I think that folks are more, I think the society overall doesn't quite understand fishing. You know, trolling here in Southeast has been around since the 1880s, but I don't think people really understand that or appreciate that it's still a very viable operation. So I think there's some folks that would prefer to see different uses of the resource. So trying to educate people to how we can all work together and harvest is going to be very important to keep working active fishermen on a wild resource. We're one of the last wild foods. Some people, you know, aren't quite hip to that.
I'm talking with Dale Kelly, the Executive Director of the Alaska Trollers Association. Dale, is there anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
Not really. I just hope everybody's out there. There's a lot of fish this year. I think that anybody who's not catching fish should get out there and catch them one, no matter what form of fishery they're involved in, because there's plenty of fish to go around and have a great time. Fish on.
From Port Hardy one morning I cast off my line. The sea was all smooth and the weather just fine. Off for Castle Rock I was headed away, where the coho flashed silver all over the bay. Where the coho flashed silver all over the bay. It was just before dawn when I reached fish ground. I lowered my pole and I let my line down. I lit up my pipe and I waited and prayed to see the coho flash silver all over the bay. See the coho flash silver all over the bay. Now the sun came up shining and so did the fish. Them girlies was humming, what more could I wish? Those bells they were ringing, I was making it pay. Where the coho flashed silver all over the bay. Where the coho flashed silver all over the bay. doctors and lawyers and bankers and more, and wheelers and dealers with a big deal galore. But let me be a troller and king for a day, where the coal flash silver all over the bay, where the coal flash silver all over the bay.
Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Amanda Compton, and that was Sally Rogers playing. With me in the studio right now is Brian Besnick. Besnick and Kimberly Vaughn with the Frank Meyer Marathon. And could you guys tell me a little bit about when the race is happening and the history of it and who Frank Meyer is or was?
Well, the race is this Saturday. The first race will be an early marathon start at 6 a.m. with the regular start at 7, and then we'll have the half marathon starting at 8 and 9 o'clock. And
what does that mean, early start?
Early start are for the people who'd like to maybe walk, especially for the half marathon, which actually if they want to show up at 6 o'clock, we'll let them, or excuse me, 7 o'clock, we'll let them start walking. If they'd like to walk the half marathon, they can do so, so they can get back and enjoy the festivities and the party at the end. But so it's for the people who might have slower times that just want to be able to get out there, still run, but still finish in a reasonable time so they're not out on the course real late.
So there's no maximum requirement for time in this race?
No, we say the course closes at noon, and so support out on the course could be a little bit slim, so we try to get everybody back by that time.
Great. And how about the history of the race? How did it start? When did it start?
Well, the race started in the late 70s, or early 70s with Park and Rec. They started a marathon locally here in town. And for a while, it was just a handful of people running it. Started out at the glacier, and they'd circled the back loop once or twice. And the course has changed over the time frame. But as it progressed through the 70s into the early 80s, it went from one race director to another race director, and the course evolved yet again. And one of the towards the last part of the 70s, early 80s, one of the runners was Frank Meyer, and he was a race enthusiast and worked really hard to keep the marathon or get a marathon and keep it going in town. And when he unfortunately passed away, they renamed the race after him in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been running the race in his honor ever since then. This will be the 20th running of the race, so we're hoping for a nice turnout. We're working for an extra set of awards, a little more hoopla.
20th since it's been named, I think.
Yeah, the 20th running of the Frank Meyer Marathon.
Mm-hmm. And how did you two get involved with it?
Well, we started running about 4 years ago, and we joined the Southeast Roadrunners Running Club and started running, and then we heard that they were looking for a race director for the marathon, and we said, well, okay, somebody with some experience will certainly take over, and nobody was, and it was coming down to where they were going to cancel the race, and Juno not having a marathon just didn't seem right. People run marathons for capital races for all the capital cities in the United States, and we're the capital city, so we had to have a marathon. So I asked Brian, which I work with him, and asked him, hey, you want to do this with me? And we agreed, and we've been doing this. This is our third year together as race directors for the race.
Well, good for you. Now, this race is kind of an important one because it's a qualify for Boston, correct?
That is correct.
Being the Boston Marathon, for which people have to make a certain time. And so this is kind of an important race because it's one of the faster ones and maybe easier than other marathons to qualify for Boston. So do you find that there are more people showing up from outside of Juno or other runners from Juno who don't normally compete join up to this one for that reason?
Well, we do have a large contingent of them that are local runners, but we do have some international competition that people are probably just visiting or they've heard about the race and they show up to race our race. But we do have some people that have been coming back for years that, you know, from way out of town, you know, other parts of the United States, and they keep coming back just because they like the course and they've had such a great time here.
And what are some examples of the other countries that you say people have traveled from?
Well, 2 years ago we had a couple people that were from Japan.
And they were great. They ran the entire 26.2 miles in either their bare feet or flip-flops. Where the construction was, they put their flip-flops on.
Amazing.
In their bare feet, it was great.
And this year we also have several people from Canada, one from Ireland and one from Australia.
Great. Now, the road's been doing, there's been some work on the road. Has that come down, finished? How is that going to influence the race?
The road out past, out past the Eagle Crest Road is great. It's newly asphalted. It's nice and smooth. The shoulders are definitely much larger out by the boat harbor there at North Douglas, so much safer course. And we hope to have the wheelchair division back next year because of that. There's a little bit of road construction at about mile 3 of the course that they promise will be smooth and at least safe for the runners, but it won't be the usual paved shoulder, but it'll be doable.
So the wheelchair division was a race. Wheelchair racers could enter this race previously, but they haven't been able to the last couple of years?
Due to the road conditions and for the safety of those racers, that we chose not to allow to have that section of the race. Now that the road has been fixed or the bad sections have been replaced, you know, we're going to bring back those divisions again next year.
Okay, so we have a full marathon and a half marathon. And are there smaller, shorter distances too?
There isn't. We've talked about it. We keep trying to figure out how we could maybe do a mini marathon so that the kids could be running smaller, shorter races and getting them involved. And just because there's a lot of fun there and a lot of energy that's at the race, so we'd like to be able to do that. But you know, we haven't quite figured out. We had to figure out how to do a marathon first, since we've never even did a 5K race. So.
We only have a little bit of time left, but I'd like to quickly go over some of the statistics. What are the records, and do you notice any trends? Who will be the contenders for this year?
Well, the fastest times that we've had on the course is our fastest marathon time for our course is 2 hours and 31 minutes and 30 seconds. That was set in 2003 by Sean Miller. The fastest woman that we've had run the race, Garrett McIntyre, ran it in 3 hours and 12 minutes.
Wow.
That was in 2009. That was our first year that we were directing the race. Half marathon time, the fastest time out there is 1 hour and 9 minutes and 33 seconds.
That's the fastest time?
For the half marathon. The top women time was 1 hour and 25 minutes.
Got it. And how about the... any potential contenders you see for winners this year?
Well, I've heard there's a lady out there that's quite fast. So we haven't gotten a name or anything, but we're getting excited to see who that is.
A local resident, right?
A local resident, yes.
I've heard that too. And how, if people would like to still participate as a racer or as a volunteer, how would they get a hold of or figure that information out?
We're on the web. If you go to the Southeast Roadrunners website and look under Frank Meyer Marathon, we're there. Or they can call me. And my phone number, just real quick, is 209-3635.
And who else has helped to put the race together this year?
Oh, we have some great sponsors that have been helping out for years and years, and we've even gotten some new ones. But we have J.M. Walsh, the MRV Architects, U-Haul, Valley Medical, the Alaska Club, McDonald's, Goo, Tyler Rental, the Sign and Printing, Commercial Sign and Printing, and first time this year is the Alaska Fudge Company. Dietpack also is in there along with Gold Belt Hotel, Foggy Mountain, and Pavitt's, and Nugget Alaska Outfitters? Yes, Nugget Alaska Outfitters.
Slew of them.
Yes.
Well, thanks for organizing the event. And just so you know, Kimberly was reading the back of the shirt that Brian has on because all the sponsors are listed there. It's a beautiful shirt, which was apparently designed by...
my dad has been designing our shirts since we started. He's kind of an artist of sorts down in Portland, and he has a pottery studio and is actually pretty good with a pen and pencil. So he's been designing those for us this year, and we have a little special add-on to our shirts this year because of the 20th anniversary.
All right. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to invite you to join KTOO News sister station, KRNN, on Facebook. Become a fan of the station to get valuable notifications like when a new show list is posted or a DJ has a great show coming up. And, of course, you can leave comments for DJs or request songs. Simply log into your Facebook account, do a search for KRNN radio station, then click the button to become a fan. You can also invite your Facebook friends to become fans, too. Easy, right? So join us. We look forward to seeing you in cyberspace.
Whether you're a seasoned investor or just beginning to plan your financial future, Marketplace Money is the source for advice you can trust. I'm Tess Vigeland. Join me and economics editor Chris Farrell as we explore the week's business news, answer your personal finance questions, and have some fun in the bargain. Marketplace Money, it's the money show for the rest of us.
Sundays at 5 on KTOO News. CD, it's called It Was a Great October. It's just released down recently, and I'm not sure where it's available here in the capital city, but it will be soon. Time is 3:45, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
And in the studio with me now is Nancy DeTourney from the Arts and Humanities Council here to talk about things going on in the art world. Nancy, thank you for coming down today.
Thanks for having me. It's another exciting week in the capital city here. Of course, there's a lot of things going on up in Haines, too. It's the Southeast Alaska State Fair this weekend. Try to get up there if you can. We have Troll Hunter Nickelodeon showing that for a couple of days here. At noon on Friday, it's J. Allen McKinnon at the State Office Building playing that fabulous Kimball organ, which if you've never been up to watch, is fun to watch and fun to listen to. At 4 o'clock on Friday, the Widow Persons are having a garden tour followed by a no-host dinner at the Canton House at 6 p.m. This is being sponsored by Glacier Gardens. You get a $20 ticket to get into Sea Glacier Gardens. You can get more information about this at 586-6424 or 789-0355. Tom Loker and Wayne Norland are up at the Tram on Friday night at 5:30 and over at TK McGuire's on Saturday night at 6 o'clock. Our Friday night concert in the park is going to be Becky Bear and Bobby Mitchell. They're storytellers, very funny people. It is also the, and I know I can't pronounce this correctly, it's the hula dancers. Hala, halau, hula, uli, ula, or something like that. And then Tony Tang's and Friends. And you're going to have Tony on?
Tony's going to be on the show tomorrow about 3:30 or so.
Excellent. This is a free event, and it's going to just burn off and be sunny and beautiful. It's going to be outdoors at Marine Park. If for some reason it's raining, it will be at the Assembly Chambers as the jack is filled for the evening. At 6 o'clock at the Canvas, it's adult hip-hop. It's a pay-as-you-can thing. You can get more information about that by calling the Canvas at 586-1750. Dan Hobson does classical guitar in the Gold Room at the Baranoff Hotel at 6 o'clock on Friday and also at 7 o'clock on Saturday. Hobo with a Stranger, Nickelodeon, is showing that at 9:30 on Friday night. Saturday, you were just talking to the Frank Myers folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so there's the Memorial Marathon and Half Marathon. Also, at 9 o'clock is Half Ton of Trouble. It's a book signing with the author James Caan at the Juno Douglas City Museum. This is free, 586-3572 for more information. At 9:30, it's the Eagle Crest Road Race, sponsored by the Juno Freewheelers. You meet at the My Catch parking lot on North Douglas Highway. There is a small charge to get a license. 789-9875 has more information about that. 11 o'clock, it's Kids Day at the Glacier for the little ones, 4 to 6. And then Troll Hunter is the movie over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. On Sunday, we have the Sunday market running from noon till 3. I don't think we'll have the Haynes produce this year or this weekend because they're up there doing the Haynes Fair. But they'll be back next week, I believe it is. I was talking to Ed Byarski. He's starting to gather garlic. So there should be interesting and fun things there. Produce is starting to come in, and there we have lots of artists, more and more. Also, Big Mike's is there with excellent barbecue, and there's wonderful fry bread.
We've got a question about it. How do the artists sign up if they'd like to be
They can give us a call. They can go onto our website and click on the link. Pretty much it's kind of a show up and be there kind of thing. It's helpful if I know how many people are coming, so we know how many tables to haul out, but you can pretty much come, and we are, speaking of that, looking for people to play music. So come on down and join into the fun there. Also at 2 o'clock, the Juno Lyric Opera Midsummer Vocal Workshop with Dr. Byron McGillray begins. They're doing the Rachmaninoff Vespers this year. The workshops will run through August 12th, and then the performance will be on August 13th. If you want more information about this, it's 586-ARIA. The rehearsal or the workshop and the performance will be at the Northern Light United Church. It costs $95 to take the workshop, but everybody who's ever taken these workshops with Byron just totally loves it. So if you're a singer, come on down. 4 o'clock, we have Sunday at Savico over at Savico Park in the Pioneer Pavilion. We have Cameron Brockett and Taylor Vidic, The Electric Scoundrels, and Escape from Brooklyn, which I believe is sort of a, I'm forgetting the word right now.
Klezmer.
Thank you very much. It is a bring-your-own-lawn-chair sort of situation. I'm not sure where we will go in the event of rain. Probably the Douglas Methodist Church, but it could be over at the Jack. I'll stay tuned, check the website on that one. got Troll Hunter over at the Nickelodeon at 4 and 7 p.m., and at 6 o'clock, Folk Dancers over at the Racquetball Club downtown. On Monday, we got a couple things going on. The Zach Gordon Youth Center is doing Survival in the Tongass. That's the morning class. And also the Juneau Economic Development Council has built an underwater glider. These are things that go on for the whole week. You need to call and get signed up for them because their space is limited. Toastmasters are at noon. At 1 o'clock, Zach Gordon has Go Fish as a summer class. You can call the Zach Gordon at 586-6235. The Canvas has a capoeira workshop that happens every Monday through August 29th. And the Gold Town is showing Rejoice and Shout, a jubilant journey through gospel music history. It's a documentary, and it looks fabulous. We have on Tuesday at 5:30 a special treat. Mark Damisch is in concert. He's on an international tour. Decided he would stop here and do a short concert. It's got Gershwin and all sorts of, you know, the hummable things, great stuff. It is a fundraiser for the Northern Light United Church Window Replacement Fund or their Lemon Creek Prison Ministry, and you're invited to get more information about that at 586-3131.
And starting a little early, it starts at 5:30.
And it's a shorter concert. It goes from 5:30 until 6:30, so it's not too late. And then at 6:30, you could dash over to the Canvas and take the swing dance lessons for all ages. That's a suggested donation of $5 to support the Canvas. Also, you can see the gospel music history movie again on Tuesday. Wednesday, it's Right for Your Life out at the Mendenhall Valley Library. You can give them a call out there if you want more info. 789-2068. The Canvas is starting Zumba lessons. Is everybody doing Zumba lessons?
My daughter is.
See there? I knew it. It sounds like lots of fun. The Canvas has a series starting. It's $25 for 5 lessons or $7 per lesson. They say you can just drop in. At 6:30 on Wednesday night, it is Family Science Night. This is happening over at the Jack. It is organized by the Juneau Economic Development Council with the U.S. Navy, DIPAC, Discovery Southeast. You're going to be making Lego things and all sorts of robotic stuff. It just really sounds like a lot of fun. It's free. It's at 6:30. It's at the Jack on Wednesday night. Also, a figure drawing begins with Jackie Manning at the Canvas at 6:30, and the charge for that is $145, which includes your materials. This runs through August 31st on Wednesdays. Thursday, we have a summer dance work. Oh, I don't think that's accurate. I'm going to take that off. Maybe that summer workshop is happening now. Ooh, I don't know. Anyway, we have kind of a busy week with unusual things going on, so stay tuned. You can always check the website.
And I understand the Smoke and Fish movie is
going
to be shown.
Oh, that's right. That's in here, too. What day was that?
I think it starts
on... Oh, it's Wednesday. Wednesday at 7 is the premiere.
The Golden Nickelodeon. It's going to be shown at the Haynes Fair this weekend also and several times here in town. It is a great film. I had an opportunity to watch a preview of it, and it's really a great film that showcases the way Native life has been in the past and how it's changing these days.
It sounds like a really interesting comparison of the clash of old and new cultures. I think many of us can relate to that.
And speaking of new culture, the theme for the Wearable Art Show is?
Fusion.
No, that's not confusion.
It could be confusion. It could be effusion. It could be it could be perfusion. Now, I was wondering what perfusion was, actually. I think it might be wearing two perfumes at one time, but I'm not sure. So there's a lot of fusion words, and you're welcome to use them all in your planning for your wearable art. We'll be getting the applications up shortly. Also, time to start thinking about the food festival on August 27th. That's that big festival that we do. It's a Saturday morning, and there's workshops and all sorts of stuff like that. So be putting that in your thinking cap.
So that's happening on Saturday the 27th, and on the 28th it's going to be the Harvest Fair at the Community Garden.
So it's all about food. I like this.
I'm getting hungry already.
Yeah, all right.
Nancy Turner, thank you so much for coming down the station today.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves. I believe the more we know and understand about our world, the more fun it is to explore. We're all in the same traveler's school of hard knocks, and it's okay to share notes. Let's spend an hour each week exploring the places and people that make our world so inviting, and share tips that help turn our travel dreams into smooth and affordable reality. Join us for Travel with Rick Steves, Sunday afternoons at 3 on KTOO.
I'm Michael Toms, host of New Dimensions. We live in the most dynamic and creative era that humankind has ever known. Each week, New Dimensions explores vital topics with some of the world's leading thinkers, from science and religion to politics and medicine. I invite you to join me every week on Sunday evenings at 8 on 104.3 FM, KTOO Juno. Together, we'll explore New Dimensions.
And you are tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ocbay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sirs Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also live on the internet at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Catherine Chapman and Ginny Hayes about upcoming workshops about preventing suicide. We'll also profile Tony Tang's one of tomorrow night's performers in the Arts Council's Concert in the Park series. And we'll also have more bear stories. If you'd like to contribute a bear story, please leave a message. You can hear bear story at my phone at 463-6425. 463-6425. Weather forecast for tonight, patchy fog, rain increasing this evening with low temperatures around 52 degrees, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Patchy fog predicted for tomorrow morning with rain likely and high temperatures around 57 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain expected Friday night and a slight chance of rain expected on Saturday. Sunday through Tuesday looks like cloudy skies and a chance of rain. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a June afternoon today and have a pleasant evening.